minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hey, Pack-A-Day listeners. It's Sarah Kelleher from the Wednesday edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. As all of us are learning how to navigate through what are some unprecedented times, our team here at Pack-A-Day, as well as the team at Cheesehead TV, will be joining forces to help those who need it. With recent COVID-19-related school closures, job disruptions, and health risks, millions of Americans will turn to local food banks for much-needed support. Together, our teams are raising money to benefit Feeding America, the nation's largest domestic hunger relief organization. Our fundraising campaign will run through March 26th to April 3rd, and all proceeds will go towards Feeding America's efforts to providing meals to those who need it across the nation. For more information, you can visit the Pack-A-Day Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast or check out any of our team's Twitter profiles. We hope you'll join us on our week-long effort to support those who truly need it. Thank you in advance for your contribution. Thank you for always listening. And as always, go Pack Go!
Welcome back, Packers fans, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is nearly the end of March. And if you're anything like me and you're stuck at home, you might have lost track of what day of the week it is or what date it is. So it is Saturday, March 28th. I am Jason Perrone, along with Mark Eckel of Packer Report. Mark, how are things at the beach today?
Nice. Weather's good. I mean, you know, I'm lucky, like I said to you, be off the air. You know, if you're going to be quarantined, it's you may as well be quarantined right on the beach, I guess, right? At least I have that going for me.
Yeah, and so at least, if nothing else, we're moving towards the warmer weather portion of the programming in the colder weather regions. So hopefully those of you who are listening that are still looking at drabby or maybe even some snow outside, hopefully that is soon going to be gone. And as we move back to whatever normal is going to look like after all is said and done. But there's some Packers to talk about. And fortunately for us, there was a move that was made on Friday. Running back Tyler Irvin is back on a one-year deal. Mark, I'm sure we share a brain on this particular topic. But for me, it was a sight for, I guess I wouldn't say a sight for sore eyes, but it was very much comforting for me to know they were bringing him back because I just didn't see any way that they shouldn't, and especially since he was still on the market at this point, right?
Yeah, I agree. He was one of the guys, of all their unrestricted free agents, I think they had 13 of them or so, 12, 13, whatever it was. There was only like three or four that I said, you know, I want back. And Crosby was one, and they took care of him very early. Irvin was another. I didn't think, you know, he didn't get a lot of money. I didn't think he would. It's a nice deal for him. He got a little bit of a guarantee. He makes a little over the minimum. It counts minimally against the salary cap, which is a good thing. But like you, I was once the market opened and he hadn't signed back yet, I was a little nervous. Like, oh, maybe they don't want him for some reason. Why? I wouldn't know. Or maybe he wanted a lot more than, you know, the Packers were willing to give him. But then it's only been a little bit. And I, you know what? He probably, not him, his agent probably said, hey, listen, we know the Packers want you. We know the kind of deal they're willing to offer. Let's see if we can get more. You know, let's see if another team might want to give you a little. And, you know, it all worked out. So, you know, I mean, if you watched the Packers at all last year, you saw the difference he made in the return game. I mean, it went from the worst, not just in the league, the worst of all time, to pretty good. You know, he was a pretty good punt returner. And, you know, kickoffs these days, most of them don't get returned anyway. They go out of the end zone. But even his kickoffs were pretty good, and his punts were very good. And I think next year you'll see him a little more involved in the offense.
Oh, he paid immediate dividends in the return game. It was evident, like from the absolute get-go. And there's another example of how Gutekunst and his team keep an eye out on who's out there during the season, and made a nice move to solidify that position. Is it, it just been, I mean, how many years in a row were special teams just very average?
Average, you're being kind.
Right. They were not good.
They were below average, yeah.
And I don't know if you got into Rick Goslin's special teams rankings every year, if you read that, the Dallas. Are you familiar with his write-up?
Absolutely. Like I said, Rick and I go back a long way.
Yeah, I figured you might know him. He's got a great reputation, a smart guy, been in the business for a while, but no one else does that as far as I know, right? Does anyone else do a special teams deal like he does?
Not like him, no. I mean, teams have their own grading systems as well, but I think a lot of the teams follow him, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Packers just seem to be at the bottom of the list all the time. You know, sure. I mean, I story after story, and we've talked about all the special teams issues that they've had. So Tyler Ervin back is a huge help there, because now you don't have to reach, which the Packers hopefully, and I don't think Gutten and his staff are reachers, but now you don't have to reach for a guy that's necessarily also a returner. Like, for example, as I was going through and doing some mock drafts, one of the reasons why I like Brandon Ayuk so much is, minus the fact that he's an Arizona State Sun Devil.
He's from Arizona State. That's why you like him.
Right. Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm very familiar. Well, and that increases my familiarity with him. But he's very versatile and can give you that special teams. You know. And now if you want to pick a different guy and you want more of a pure receiver, like I'm hearing the Packers are pretty high on Denzel Mims and some of those other guys, now you maybe make that selection and you go with the guy who's the pure receiver and can really add some good mojo to your offense. So the Tyler Ervin signing back is obviously great all around. And then, the only other thing I was going to say on it was, now after that transaction, Ken Ingles updated the salary cap projection, which is just a projection, but he's got the spendable cap at about minus $50,000, which is easily fixed. I'm not concerned about that at all. I mean, in real money, they're about $10.5 million over the cap, or under the cap, I should say.
Well, I thought more than that even. Well, we don't know what's his name's deal is yet. Funchess.
Right.
We don't know how. We have. That's kind of weird, isn't it? The deal was reported a few days. Now the Packers haven't announced it yet, but it's been out there for a couple days now, and we don't even know how many years he got.
I mean, yeah,
one-year deal, but we don't. We have no idea. That's kind of a little strange, don't you think?
Well, so I guess it would be more strange to you than anybody else. So let me ask you this: what is the typical timeline for a player gets signed to the transaction details are available for you guys to write it up?
Well, to be honest, usually the agent gives it to you. That's where the team's never. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Through the years, I've gotten information from the team. 20% of the time, maybe. I might be a little high there. If they want it out, when I had people in the front office that actually liked me, which wasn't very often, they would give me some details. But mostly it comes from the agent. That's why sometimes they're always a little higher than when they're first reported, they're a little bit higher, because the agent gives you like what it could be. For instance, with the linebacker that the Packers signed, Kirksey, if you remember when it first got out, it was $16 million, right?
Right.
Well, that's
right.
It hits all of incentives, it'll be $16
million. Right, right.
$13 million. But eventually it goes, I would say within a week usually, it goes on the NFLPA's website, which a lot of media members have access to now. So you see it there. And that's when a writer – here, I'm going to give out all the writer secrets here. I'm going to piss off all the beat writers now.
Behind the scenes.
I'm just going to tell you the way it works. So the agent gives it to you early, and that's why you'll see, especially like the bigger names, you know, when a big guy signs, you'll see like originally, like that day, you'll see, you know, so-and-so signed for 6 years, $84 million, $40 million guaranteed. You say, oh, wow, okay. Then about a week later, the beat writers they'll have another little story saying, here's the full details of so-and-so's contract. And it'll say base salary of this, you know, signing bonus of this. He can make this much based off incentives. He can do that. All that gets put on the NFLPA website. And it breaks it down for you really nice. But again, We haven't heard anything about Funch. We haven't heard one, if it's 1 year, 8 years. I mean, it's kind of that. Just I find it a little strange that there's been no leak whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think part of what you're saying is interesting, and that's, you know, that's awesome for you to share it with us. But what I was going to say was, we know by now that the reporting, the stuff that scrolls across the bottom of the screen on ESPN, is not the guaranteed money, and the NFL is different in that. It's not like baseball where you sign a contract and every penny is guaranteed. And even if the player gets cut or leaves the team and goes and sits on his couch for 3 years, he's still going to collect on that money. So in the NFL, you have to be very diligent in keeping yourself up to date with what these guys are actually going to get paid.
And the guaranteed money is really what counts in football, too, because the rest of it is just numbers, to be honest with you. I mean, most guys don't get – they either – if they don't pan out, they get released – before their contract's up, and then so they don't get the rest of that money. Or if they are good, they'll get a, going into your last year, they'll give you an extension for whatever many more years and whatever. Which leads me to what the Packers should be doing right now with David Bakhtiari. I think they could extend him. His cap number is very high this year. I believe it's $14 million. Mm-hmm. They could give him a new deal, you know, what, give him what he's worth, and lower that cap number by $2-3 million, which would give them a little more cap, and they're probably going to do that because they're getting to the point where they're going to need a little more cap space. You gave Engels his numbers out. I mean, they're going to need a little more room. So, and again, Lane Taylor is still the elephant in the room that, you know, everybody knows they can get $4 million with if they trade or cut him, and I think they're waiting. I would think at this point he may get traded during the draft.
Yeah, so David Bakhtiari, his cap hits this year is the same as last year almost. It's up 500,000, so it's 14.7 against the cap.
You can get that down to like between 10 and 12. Mm-hmm. And save, like I said, you know, maybe 3 million or so.
Yeah, his base is 10.5 and then his dead cap is only 3.2.
What are not cut? I'm not saying that. I'm not
Well, hoping. just for throwing numbers out there in his terms of, you know, turning a bunch of it into a signing bonus or whatever that be. There's always ways to make it happen.
Yeah, you extend them, give them a bonus up front, and that, you know, stretch that out over 6 years or however long his new deal will be, and you know, problem solved. You save some money. Same with Corey Lindsey. If they want to keep him around, which I would, again, I'm hearing things like maybe they won't, but you could lower his number by a couple million as well.
Yeah, and I'd have to think that there's probably a value to Corey Lindsey he's got to be probably about 28, 29 years old. He's been pretty durable. I mean, he's actually one of those guys that could be a sneaky, tough thing because if you're trying to bring him back at a team-friendly deal, there's, you know, centers are not easy to – really good centers are not easy to find. So there could be – I mean, there's probably going to be a team that's going to be willing to outbid – the Packers. They would be smart to try to offer him a deal now and say, hey, let's get you an extension. We'll get you some more money now. You know, yeah, it may not be a total market deal when you hit the market next year in free agency, but everything is so uncertain right now. Like, I, you know, I don't know how much Kirk Herbstreit's opinion matters to you, but he says he'll be surprised if there's even a season this year. And I don't know, have you heard anything from anybody of note that that's a possibility? I guess anything is.
Anything's possible with this, what's going on, but A friend of mine sent me the Herbstreit, you know, the quote and the little story that went with it, and I tweeted or I texted him back and said, if there's no NFL, the world's over. It's the end of the world. I mean, if this goes on that long that it cancels the NFL season, then we got problems that are beyond the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you know what I'm saying? It, first of all, the NFL has showed you they don't care. Everybody wanted them to put off free agency, put off the league year, put off the draft.
Nope.
They said, hey, we're the NFL. We do what we want to do. Mm-hmm. We don't care about no virus. We're having our draft. We're going to move it around. We're going to be smart. You know, we're not going to put anybody at risk. But we're the NFL. We're not Major League Baseball. We're not hockey. We're not some other. We're the NFL. Don't tell us what to do. So for the NFL to cancel, say, whoa, and guess what? I couldn't agree with the NFL more for having the draft. and for having free agency, because they're not putting anyone at risk. You know, guys are signing over the phone. This is 2020. You don't have to be – this isn't, you know, where you have to actually see – Tampa Bay didn't have to meet Tom Brady to sign him. I think they knew who he was. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, you could get all this done, and they're getting it done. And they're giving people an outlet. I think we talked about this before a little bit, but, you know, we're talking about even a small deal like Tyler Irvin, right? It's something that we don't have to just – that we could tell, hey, the Packers re-signed their return guy. Hey, that's great. You know, instead of just worrying every day about the virus and worrying every day about being quarantined, worrying every day about, you know, what – you know, I need this, I need that. Can I go to the store? You know, it gives you – and that's what sports are supposed to be, an escape from reality and, a fun thing. So at least thank God football, because everything else is done. At least football's given us something to talk about, good and bad. Hey, I didn't like that signing. I like that one. I can't believe they let that guy go. Whatever. It's giving you something to talk about, something to think about.
Yeah. Well, I for one, greatly appreciate having it around and just a little bits here and being able to talk with some Packers football with you and the other guys that I do some of the other shows with. It's obviously a good escape for everybody, but I think we're fortunate to be able to do this and just kind of take a break from it for a minute there. I mean, yeah. I maybe, you know, it seemed like it was the NBA and that player that tested positive that kind of started the whole ball rolling of sports shutting down. Maybe the NFL in their selfish ways are going to be the ones that are going to save the world and say, no, we're going on, we're moving ahead. And all of a sudden everything just gets resolved. Who knows, you know?
I just pray that by training camp, we're talking training camps. Now they might, I've heard, and I think we've all heard this, and it makes, there might not be those OTAs.
That
start up pretty soon. Yeah, they might. And guess what? The NFL can get by without OTAs. All right, let's be honest. Are they good things? Yeah, it's good for the young guys and all this and that. But hey, I can give up an OTA here and there.
But well, there's a lot like you mentioned.
July when camp opens, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, like you said too, it's 2020. So even though it's not the same thing. I guess teams that have a new coordinator or a new head coach, there's a lot of technology that you can at least connect with somebody and show them what you're doing.
Right.
You know,
I mean, same, but – and that's where I will say this. If there's no OTAs and things, you know, but everything else stays the same and by the end of July when camps open, everything's fine. Yeah, I think the new coaches, the Ron Rivera in Washington, I'm trying to think who else, the Joe Judge with the Giants – those guys, you know, Mike McCarthy and Dallas, they're all going to be a step behind that, because that's who really needs the offseason is, you know, just to get to know their players, just to get to know who's what, where, you know, where, you know, if you're changing from a 4-3 to a 3-4 or vice versa, if you're going from a, you know, a West Coast offense to a more run-oriented, whatever you're doing, yeah, you might need a little more time. So keep that's something to keep an eye on. I think teams with veteran teams with that have been through the same system, they're going to be at a little bit of an advantage over the new coaches and new systems.
Right. Yeah. And so fortunately, this is year two with Matt LaFleur versus last year.
Yeah, last year this would have been a problem.
Yeah, it would have been. And there's, you know, rookies and all that other kind of stuff. But you know, hopefully there's very minimal disruption. And again, I'm glad the NFL is sticking with it, because I happen to work in an industry that's been very impacted by all of this, which is hospitality. And so any sense of normalcy to me right now is just like, I can't get enough of it. I'm jonesing for it in the worst way. So I'm with you, man. This is a good thing. It's a good escape. So thank you, Tyler Irvin, for signing your contract so we could have something fun to talk about on this particular day. But the big question before we move on to a really cool piece that you did for Packer Report is there's still some players out there. And even though the Packers right now don't have a ton of cap space, however you want to look at it, are there any other moves that you want to see before before the draft, because let's keep it relevant and within the next couple of weeks. Do you think the Packers have to bring in another body or two before they draft?
No, they don't have to. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing – you know, another good veteran player. And I like the Funchess move, by the way. I know I'm sure our colleagues, you know, talked about that all week, but I kind of like it. I think he's still young, 25. I didn't realize how young he was. He came out very early or very young. Big target, good. You know, the Packers have struggled in the red zone. the last couple of years, right? Well, this gives him another good red zone target, I think. Again, I'm not saying, wow, hey, listen, Super Bowl now, we got Devin Funchess. But, no, it's a good addition. And, again, I'd love to see what the contract's for if it ever comes out. I mean, if they gave him a ton of money, I might have a different opinion. But I'm sure they didn't. If they gave him a ton of money, the agent would have put it out there by now. So, anyway, I wouldn't mind another veteran. I wouldn't of their own guys. I like to see what they're going to do with Tremont Williams. I wouldn't, you know, if they tell me they're re-signing him, I certainly wouldn't be upset. I don't know how much he'll have left, but I think he provides a very good mentor slash leader to an otherwise young group of defensive backs. I think he's very good for both King and Alexander. Sullivan, you know, Jackson, Holloman, all those. I mean, it's a very young group back there, and I wouldn't, you know, I'd like to see a veteran back there. And if it's not Tremont, then another guy in that ilk, maybe not 37 years old, but an older veteran corner, maybe.
Well, and you said too, this was another nice insight that you were willing to share with us. You said that everyone's talking about how deep this class is with tackles and wide receivers, but the cornerback class, you've got someone on the inside who said this is going to be a good corner class as well, too, right?
Oh, the guy that I trust the most, I'll be writing a lot of draft stories in the next couple of weeks. Yeah, he said he's never seen a corner class. Now, he's not saying it's they're all, you know, there's Deion Sanders or anybody in this draft, but he's saying – yeah, I think he said there's 14 guys that he really likes that he thinks could come in and play for you off the go, which is a lot.
Wow. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, he said, and they're all about the same. He said, you know, the kid from Ohio State's probably the best, and he could go as high as number 3 overall. But then he said there's a big group of guys after that that are all good. They're all good players, good solid players, and they may last till the third round. But again, looking at it strictly from the Packers. Sure, but if they draft a corner, then obviously it's somebody that they like and they think it can help. But they're young enough back there. I don't think – I mean, I'm not looking for – I mean, if they draft a young guy, it's probably going to be to take over for Kevin King next year if they don't think they're going to re-sign him. But I just want a guy – I just want a veteran back there. I want a Tremont Williams or someone like him just to be that mentor for the younger guys because, like I said, it's a pretty young group.
Yeah, it is. It's a young group, and I think we always see what the Packers do in one year to address the following years, and it gives us a clue as to what they might do. I don't know what their plans are for Kevin King. He had a good statistical season in 2019. Was that a flash, or was it just simply, hey, he's finally healthy. This is what he can actually do when he's healthy for a whole season. We'll find out how the team sees it soon enough.
Yeah, well, I think we'll see what he does in 2020. If he has another solid year, I mean, again, they'll probably try to keep him. The problem is, if they don't get something done with, they have five very good, in my opinion, five of their top players' contracts expire again at the end of this year. Bakhtiari, Lindsey, as we've mentioned, Kevin King,
Aaron Jones, and Jamal Williams.
No, Kenny Clark.
And Kenny Clark, yeah.
I'm not putting Jamal. I mean, yeah, I would have it's 5.5, if you want to say.
Right, sure.
But Kenny Clark, I mean, that's, you know, I think Kenny Clark's the best player on the team. Other than, I mean, Aaron Rodgers aside, I think Kenny Clark's the best young player on the team. How about that?
Yep.
I think he's so important to that. I mean, and I think they think so, too. I mean, he's just, that defense is just so different when he's healthy and playing well. And he's the kind of guy, and I think this is the best compliment you can give a player in any sport. He makes the people around him better. Dean Lowry's – when Kenny Clark's at the top of his game, Dean Lowry's a good player. If Clark's a little nicked up, bagged up, not playing as well, Lowry's not very good at all. And it just shows you how important Clark is to the rest of that line and the line by everything. He's just – I can't say enough good things about Kenny Clark.
Right, yeah. No, he's great. And I think the Packers they'd be foolish not to try to get a deal done with him, even though defensive line doesn't, you know, necess- I guess per se, it doesn't impact the pass rush, and they say, you know, be careful with your money if they're not impacting the pass rush. But Kenny Clark actually does in a way, because he's opening stuff up for the Smiths and Gary and everyone else.
And they've actually said it, and that's rare for a team to come out and, well, Ted Thompson never said much about anything, so we had a bunch of years where we never heard anything. But I mean, they came out and said, yes, we want to get this done with Kenny Clark. So they've come out and they will. They'll get something done. It's just a matter of when and how much.
Yeah. Well, and you can't ever have too many corners. And the thing is, it's going to come down to the value proposition. So if they get into the third round and there's a guy sitting right there staring him in the face that they were thinking, like, that, you know, if he's not going to make it past, or they've got a second round grade on him, that's going to change. You know, I mean, you got to trust the board. And the other thing is we do all these mock drafts, and I can tell you all the ones that I've done, for some reason, they all tend to end up the same. But I think we fall into that lazy, at least I do. I fall into that lazy, like, okay, I normally pick this guy in this spot. He's there. I don't love anybody else that's around him. So you go with that. And then we get used to the idea of that player. And then when they don't end up picking that player in that spot, then there's a little bit of like, oh, we missed out on that guy. But that's, you know, that's why we're not in the draft room, and the other guys that are getting paid and that know a lot more than we do are, you know, and hopefully they stay true to their board. I think the Packers have generally done that. I mean, there were a couple head scratchers that Ted Thompson made over the years, but, you know, I mean, every GM's been put in that spot where you thought for sure a guy was going to be there, and then all of a sudden he's not. And I think you and I have even talked about, at one point or another, the Justin Harrell pick in 2007. That one's always going to stand out to me as the biggest clunker of a first-round pick that I can imagine. And I know that he was injured and he never really got to live up to his potential, but he had an injury history coming out, and that was a panic pick by Thompson, because Revis and Marshawn Lynch both went before Harrell, and then Harrell was the pick.
And he would have taken either one. I mean, I think he thought in his mind one of them is going to be there. And they both went. And then he kind of panicked.
He was panicking. So speaking of, actually, that perfect transition. So that leads into your cool piece you did on Packer Report, which is the Packers' all-time top picks in each round. So I'll kind of turn it over to you, Mark. I've got your notes here. But
I want to hear your comments on it, because this is my opinion. This is all my opinion. So tell me if you disagree with any of them.
Right. Well, so the first round, you know, in round one, you've got Aaron Rodgers in 2005. Right. And recency effect right now, absolutely. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a home run. He's a complete, total home run pick for the Packers.
Getting him at 24.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't get him with the first pick of the draft. They got him at 24. So that makes it even more special, I think. And they've had some good first-round picks now. Don't get me wrong. I'm not Kenny Clark, who I just said. I mean, mm-hmm. on a lot of teams, he would have been their best. But, you know, when you get Aaron Rodgers – when you get your Hall of Fame quarterback, that's got to be the guy, right?
At number 24.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was easy.
So, first rounder, it's Aaron Rodgers. And remember, this is all time, everybody. So, this goes back 100 years. I'm sure you dug into the archives to see what happened in the 20s and 30s.
Just an aside here, I kept my main pick to the modern era.
I'd say.
But then I mentioned some guys from the past as well.
Sure.
You know, we're going way back. I didn't want to make it because it's a different world now. In the Super Bowl era, the NFL era, you know, when this is a different – that's usually the Super Bowl era is when people draw the line a little bit. But
right.
But anyway, go ahead. Second round, I went with Leroy Butler.
Second round, Leroy Butler. And I love how you had to get that little jab in there, which is true. And speaking of the Hall of Fame, Butler got robbed this year. And he did. He really did. He really did. So, Leroy Butler, second rounder, 1990 out of Florida State. And he was drafted as a corner originally, right?
I was going to say, you're showing me a little something here.
There we go.
You're right. He was drafted as a corner.
Yep.
And actually played it, I believe, most of his rookie year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he did. I was covering the league then, but I wasn't involved with Green Bay as much. But I believe they just had a bigger need at safety at the time, and said, let's put him there. And look what happened. Well, Ronnie Lott was the same thing. Ronnie Lott was drafted as a corner.
Yeah.
By San Francisco way back in the day.
Well, if the Packers had a need at safety, they had no idea how big of a need they did have when you look at what Butler turned out to be.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he's, like I said, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I can't believe he didn't go in this year.
I love Nick Collins. You know, Sharper was good for a minute, but different type of guy. I love Nick Collins, but Nick Collins, even if he finished out his career and played the whole thing and didn't get hurt, I still don't think he would have put up the same type of impact and numbers that, that Butler did.
No, I love Nick Collins too, and it was a shame how his career ended. But I put Leroy Butler, I mean, I covered Brian Dawkins almost his entire, you know, Eagle career. I did cover his entire Eagle career, and then he went to the Broncos at the end. But, you know, Dawk's great, and Dawk went into the Hall of Fame a couple years ago.
And but rightly so.
Butler's in the same paragraph. Mm-hmm. I mean, I put him right in that same, you know, Polamalu, great as well. You know, Ed Reed, you know, they're all great players. But Butler has nothing to he. You know, he could hang with Brian Dawkins and Troy Polamalu and all those guys. I mean, he really can.
Yeah, and those guys are kind of synonymous with each other. Very good impact. Long careers, great career story careers. I'll always remember Dawkins. I love Brian Dawkins, but I'll always remember him for catching that, as I've heard many times referred to, the bag of kittens that Brett Favre threw up in overtime in that 4th and 26 game, and ending all hope at that point. So you had a cool note in here though about the second round. If you want to, because you kept it to the modern era, but you had another name listed here who was a really good pick back in the early '60s.
That's what I said. You know, going back, I mean, you know, I kept it, but. That guy, Jim Taylor, wasn't a bad second-round pick in 1960.
Yeah, I've heard of that guy.
He wasn't bad.
Yeah, he did okay for himself.
I think he is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. No, he is.
Yeah, I know he is. I actually have a signed football from Jim Taylor.
Yeah, old-time Packers, and if there's one era which I could have seen live, it's that team.
I was little. I wish I was older and knew what I was watching. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right, yeah. I mean, for me, my consciousness of what I was really watching didn't really kick in until I was 10 or 11 years old. So,
what was the first Packer game you remember watching?
Monday Night Football, Packers-Bears, 1986, after the Bears won the Super Bowl.
When Perry scored the touchdown and stuff?
I don't think it was that game. It might have been. I'd have to go back and look. It was at Lambeau Field. The Packers hosted the Bears. And that game actually is the game that made me a Packers fan, because up to that point, I hadn't had a lot of football watching influence, and I was from the Illinois locale, so most of my family were Bears fans.
Wow.
And yeah. I actually rooted for the Bears in the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
And then later that next season, for whatever reason, and again, I can't explain it to you. I don't have like that easy, explainable moment as to how I became a Packers fan. All I knew is I wanted Green Bay to win that game. And they didn't, and I was pissed off about it. And from that point forward, I was a Packers fan.
Wow. Okay. And who was it? So 86, you said?
86.
So who was a quarterback then?
I think it was Randy Wright. If it wasn't, I think Lynn Dickey was done by then, right?
Yeah, I was going to say I think he was, right? No, that might have been his last year.
86. I'd have to go back and look. I think it was Randy Wright.
I'm going to tell you in a second. You can go on with my third round.
I think it was Randy Wright. So while you're looking that up, third round, sticking with the modern era, good teammate of Leroy Butler's, wide receiver Antonio Freeman out of Virginia Tech.
Randy Wright was a quarterback. Dickey's last year was 85.
So was Randy Wright, yep. So Freeman, wide receiver, Virginia Tech. Now this one, I don't know who all the third round receivers are that the Packers have ever chosen, but Freeman was a huge, huge, huge part of those offenses and was awesome. He caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl. You know, he was a rookie, and interestingly enough, you said this was close.
It was, because I'll tell you who it came down to. Freeman, who I picked.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Brooks.
Okay.
Who was his teammate and, you know, was a very good player also. But he got injuries kind of derailed his career a little bit, so that's kind of why I gave the edge for him. And another guy, and I thought about him, but I went with Freeman, is Morgan Burnett, who we talked about earlier as a safety, you know, a pretty good safety.
Yeah, I think you did it right. I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, people look at Brooks and Freeman and they say, oh, well, Brooks was a better receiver, but you make a good point. His whole body of work was more robust because he was on the field.
And those touchdowns, 50-something touchdowns, which was like fourth all-time in Packer history.
The most exciting of which was the he did Vikings. What against the Vikings on Monday Night Football.
Yep. And then again, going back in the day, if we go back in the day, 1958, the Green Bay Packers in the third round selected a linebacker named Ray Nitschke.
Ah, that guy.
Yeah, he wasn't bad.
And he started Packer Report.
Report, yes, he did.
So you all, I hope there's no bad juju that you didn't pick him for that.
Well, I would have. I was only, my top selection was only from the Super Bowl, you know, after 66
and on.
Right.
But you made a mention of him.
Yeah, thank you. Right, I thought I had to.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so round four. This one actually, this, you know, I was thinking about round four, and it makes a ton of sense. David Bakhtiari, offensive tackle out of Colorado. Because like you said, when you find your bookend left tackle in the fourth round, that has to go down as one of Ted Thompson's better picks in his tenure.
Absolutely. And he started right from the go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Pro Bowl, All-Pro left tackle in the fourth round. And to be honest, the fourth round hasn't been very kind to the Packers. I mean, let's just look recently. Jamon Moore, Vince Beagle.
Carl Bradford, or was he a fifth rounder?
He might have been fifth. Jake Ryan, you know, Blake Martinez, say what you want about him, but he's not David Bakhtiari, you know. Jonathan Franklin, J.C. Treader, they were the same year as Bakhtiari, actually. So, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot. There wasn't Mike Daniels, good player. Mike Daniels could have been under consideration, but no, he's not David Bakhtiari.
Well, and that year was interesting. His rookie year, because the plan was not to put Bakhtiari at left tackle. It was Bulaga tearing his ACL in family night, and yep, he missed the season. So they moved Bakhtiari to the left side because Bulaga was going to move to the left side.
Yeah, no, that you're correct.
That was the plan. And then I think Bakhtiari was – I think they were probably planning on maybe playing him on the right side, but he's been a left tackle ever since that day. It was Wally Pipp action, but Wally Pipp actually got to come back and play on the right-hand side of the offensive line.
No, you're
and now, and I think this has happened since the last time we went, but Wally Pipp is not with the Packers anymore, unfortunately. I mean, they had to do what they had to do, but Brian Bulaga will be protecting whoever plays quarterback in Los Angeles for the Chargers this year.
Yes, you will, and good for him. I mean, like I said, I've written this. That was the one that, and usually I have a strong opinion one way or another. This one I could, if they brought him back, I wouldn't have been upset. I would have said, good, okay, they're bringing Bulaga back. Good, the line's intact, and they're good to go. Letting him go, I understand why. He's had injury history. He's getting up there in age. They didn't have a lot of room under, you know, this wasn't last year where they had a ton of cap room. And they wound up getting a guy who, he's not Bulaga, but he's not bad for half the price of Bulaga.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, you have to do what you have to do sometimes.
Right. And the Packers chose Rick Wagner, former Wisconsin Badger, and so we'll see how he does.
I think he'll be fine. Will he be as good as Bulaga? Probably not, but he's, again, I love Bulaga. I love him. Great player. Had a great career with the Packers. But, like I said, sometimes you have to do what you have to do.
Right. And
he's had injury history. He didn't get crazy money. He got the money that exactly what I thought he would get, 3 years, $30 million. They must just feel that, and they're probably going to draft. I mean, I'd be shocked if they didn't draft a right tackle early, if not the first round, the first three rounds this year. And again, there's a lot of tackles in this draft too.
Right.
And they know that, obviously.
Yeah, and I expect the Packers to address that. I mean, there's going to be a lineman picked. I don't know whether it's going to be interior or a tackle, but there's going to be some fortification that's done on that line there because Bulaga's gone. Rick Wagner is not a long-term solution. They're going to want to get a guy in there, and then Cole Madison got hurt at the end of last year. There's a lot of question marks in the depth of the offensive line right now, right?
Yeah, I mean,
just depth.
I think inside, well, they still have Lane Taylor, so I don't – I mean, they have depth as long as they – I mean, they have Jenkins and Turner, and they have Patrick and Taylor. So I think they're a little okay inside. If they get rid of Taylor, then they might need to come in, you know, middle rounds with a guard or something. But
right,
they're going to draft a tackle early. I mean, Alex Light has proven he's not the guy. I'll be surprised if he even makes a team next year, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think you've got a case there. So. Round five, this one is interesting. I might need you to explain this one a little bit. I mean, I see how you came to the pick, but so your fifth round pick was...
Oh, that was the hardest round to pick.
Kabir Bajabiamila. Okay, now nobody's going to argue, and let's just, you know, he's been in the news for all the wrong reasons lately.
Oh, yeah, that had nothing to do with me.
Which doesn't. So let's take that out of the equation. Everyone just remember, think about what he did as a defensive end rushing the passer. He is the second all-time in Packers history with 74 and a half sacks. And that was your deciding factor, but I'll turn it over to you to let you know of all the other candidates that you were considering.
Well, Dorsey Levins, who's one of my favorite, and I was a little biased there, I'm not going to admit. We all have our favorites, and Dorsey's one of mine. Mm-hmm. So I was strongly thinking him. And I actually talked to somebody about that, and they said, no, you got to give the KGB. I said, all right, you're probably right. But there was some other, Aaron Campbell, very good player for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And again, he hasn't done it long enough. If he stays a Packer, and I do this again in 5 years, Aaron Jones could take over that spot. Mm-hmm. But not yet, right? He hasn't done it long enough yet.
His story is still in the works.
Exactly. So I went with KGB, like you said, you know, second all time in sacks. Got to get that deserves something, right? I mean, he had some big years. I mean, 2001 was his first full time year, right? 13.5 sacks. 2002, 12 sacks. 2003, 10 sacks. 2004, 13.5 sacks. That's four double-digit sacks years in a row. Then 2005, he fell off to 8, and then he was gone after that. Or no, he had 6 in 2000. He kind of tailed off, but still, that's some good production out of a fifth round. And then he came back with 9.5 in 2007, so... You know, again, if someone wants to tell me I should have gone with Campman, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not infallible, but, you know, or Levins. I love Dorsey Levins, too. So what it tells you is Packers do pretty damn good in the fifth round.
Yeah, there's some rounds that have been really good to them. And then, like you said, there's been some other rounds that haven't.
Yeah. It's just weird, right?
It is. It's very strange. But looking through this list, it gives us hope in every single round that they could find – you know, the next insert name. So moving on to round 6, perfect example.
About KGB, and I should have put this in the story, and after I sent it, I thought of it. Not only what made KGB even more important to the Packers then is because they failed miserably the year prior to him in the first round with Jamal Reynolds, who was supposed to be the big pass rusher. They took him with the 10th overall. They moved up with Seattle in the Hasselbeck trade. And he was a total bust. He never did anything. But then getting KGB in the fifth round kind of gave him the pass rusher that they had hoped Reynolds was going to be.
So they figured they got it. They just got it in the wrong way.
Exactly.
So that worked out. So you moving on to round 6. You got tight end Mark Chmura, drafted in 1992. I don't think anyone's going to argue with you on that one. His connection with Brett Favre during those Super Bowl years was – absolutely unequaled in terms of a tight end. I don't, you know, I mean, you had another guy that you were considering who definitely deserves a look, but Chmura, I think, was the right pick.
I mean, Crosby, I like Crosby, and I thought, you know, the guy's he's won some games for the Packers. He's been a kicker for a long time, but I had to go with the tight end over the kicker.
Right. And then round 7, I think anybody who's been a Packers fan for the last at least 25, 20 years should know the answer to this one. This is the most famous 7th round pick, I think, in the history of the team. It's unparalleled. It's receiver Donald Driver.
Yeah, I mean, when you get your all-time leading receiver in the 7th round, that's a hell of a pick, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to compare it to Tom Brady, but yeah, you got your all-time leading receiver. He was a huge, huge part of this offense. And the cool thing about Donald Driver was the story of his career. I'm not going to talk about his personal story. It was a lot of overcoming adversity, too. But in his career in 1999, and I think even in 2000, he was not what he turned out to be. He had to work his ass off to get good. He was dropping balls. I think he fell out of favor a little bit with, I don't know if it was the coaching staff or Favre, or if he was just kind of a project that they had to work on. But the light bulb went off for him, and he figured it out.
Yes, he did. Yeah, you're right. And I don't think anybody expected him to be what he was, what he became. I mean, if he would have become, you know, a good possession type third receiver, that's fine for a 7th round pick, right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna love that. If the Packers in the 7th round this year take a receiver, and he turns out to be a good possession third number 3-4 guy, you say, hey, that's a good pick. But this guy became not only the number one receiver on the, you know, while he was there, he became the number one receiver in team history, which is amazing that all the great receivers the Packers have had through the years.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Donald Driver, easy pick for quickie.
That was probably the easiest one.
Easy pick for round seven. So then you had some cool notes here on there used to be more rounds back in the day,
Yes.
so you've got a couple of other guys noted here too.
Yeah, what I forget what I said.
You
So
got
oh,
Marv
well,
Fleming.
Marv Fleming in the 11th round. He was
And
pretty
then
good to get in the 11th round. And then the all-time pick, right?
yep.
Bart Starr in the 17th round in 1956.
Unreal.
17th round. Think about that for a second. 17.
Yeah, that's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
That's like going through the draft twice now and then adding three more rounds on top of that.
Yeah. That was the, a different era back then, but that's it just goes to show you, you've got to have the right people in the room looking at talent and understand what they see and what it could translate to. But the other thing is there's a lot of intangibles. Like there have been, and you saw it through your years covering the NFL. There is a ton of talent. These guys are all talented. That's why they're in the draft pool. But what's between their ears is a lot of times what makes the difference between whether they make it or not. And that's just something that you can't, they don't release a lot of that information from the combine, the interviews and stuff like that, the mental stuff. So you see this kid come out and he's got these great numbers and he put up great numbers in his pro day, but then he gets on the field. He can't do anything. He can't do anything. He can't figure it out, or he's getting into trouble, or name other mental issue that pops up that is holding the player back. And I don't mean like mentally, mentally ill. I'm just saying like we all have been in situations where we held ourselves back because mentally we just couldn't get over a hump or something like that.
Yeah, that's a very, very big part of it. And also, I've always thought this. I mean, some guys are just fit certain coaches and certain systems better than they would another system, if Lombardi doesn't come to Green Bay, Bart Starr might not be Bart Starr. Right? I mean, 17th round pick, another coach might have cut him.
And the
And
same, you could see the same thing. The Packers have had that story repeat itself over and over again, or not over and over, but that happened with Bart Starr and Lombardi, and then you could say the same thing for Favre and Holmgren.
And Ron Wolf too, trading for him. I mean, if Favre stays in Atlanta, who knows what he becomes? Probably nothing.
Well, nothing because he, and I say this very affectionately because Jerry Glanville did a lot of good things in his coaching career, but one of the most idiotic things that he did was not, he had Brett Favre pegged negatively from the get-go, and it's very widely known.
That was the whole thing. He didn't want a quarterback. The general manager, I think it was Ken Herrick at the time, he drafted Favre. Glanville wanted, he thought he had a good enough quarterback in, the guy had three names. Billy Joe Tolliver, was it? I think it was.
Yeah.
Billy Joe Tolliver. He thought he had his quarterback. He wanted either a receiver or a defensive player or whatever he wanted. And the general manager says, no, we're taking this kid far. And that's happened sometimes. A coach gets mad that he didn't get the guy he wanted because the general manager overrode him, and he'll just take it out on the player and not play him or treat him poorly. And that's kind of what happened in Atlanta. And then, Wolf always liked Favre. Wolf wanted to take him. Wolf was with the Jets then. I'm sure you've heard this story a million times. Wolf was with the Jets. He wanted Favre. Atlanta took him right ahead of him, and they wound up taking Browning Nagel, who didn't really pan out. So now Wolf's in Green Bay. He sees if Favre's not doing much in Atlanta, and there's some problems there. He calls his buddy Herrick and says, "Hey, you took him in the second round. I'll give you a first round pick for him." Atlanta says, "Sure, okay, we'll do that." And the rest of it is Packer history.
Easy swap, and then you another case in point of head coach and GM would be exactly what you said for your first round choice was Mike Sherman did not want a quarterback in 2005. He wanted defensive help. He knew his job was going to be on the line, and well, I shouldn't say that necessarily. I know it was a very disappointing loss to the Vikings in the playoffs at Lambeau Field. That was the Randy Moss Moon game. So coming off of that, Sherman wanted a defensive player, and they end up picking Aaron Rodgers, and that was part of the debate that went on in the draft room was I think Sherman was kind of up in arms because that was Ted Thompson's first draft. So Sherman had just lost his GM duties,
Oh, they didn't get
wasn't happy about it, and then this guy that they bring in ends up picking a quarterback, and Sherman wanted a defensive guy in the worst way.
Yeah, no, and you brought up Mike Sherman, and I've been a Packer fan for God, I'm old. So 50 years I've been a Packer. And even some of the bad coaches they've had through the years, I liked them. They were the Packers coach. I didn't like Mike Sherman. And I don't know him personally. I just don't like Mike Sherman. I didn't think he was a terrible general manager. And yeah. People say, but he wasn't a bad coach. Yeah, he was a bad coach too. My God. He had Brett Favre. He had Amon Green, the all-time leading running back in Packer history. He had good receivers. He had an offensive line that was very good. He never got to an NFC championship game.
He should have. He should have, because you've made a really astute point. I called it the 4th-and-26 game, but you call it something else.
I call it the 4th-and-1 game.
Yep.
Twice. He went for it on 4th-and-1 right before the half, and he should have kicked the field goal and gone up 2 scores. Then he doesn't go for it. The Eagles are dead. The Eagles linemen are standing there. They're huffing and puffing. They're running the ball down their throats the whole second half. And it's 4th-and-1 from the 40, and he punts it into the end zone, so he only gains 20 yards. They go for it on 4th-and-1, get the first down, game's over. Then Brett Favre's taking the knee. Don't get me started on Mike Sherman. And there's more games than that. He blew other games in his history.
Oh, plenty. And then he gave that huge extension to Cletus Hunt, and he just did a bunch of stuff that didn't.
How'd that Joe Johnson free agent sign?
Yeah, I mentioned that. I think I originally said Joe Thomas a couple weeks ago when we were talking, and you were like, "Wait a minute, that's definitely not a bad guy." Joe Johnson, different story. That didn't pan out. He got hurt. He was never effective.
Terrible hire by Wolf. Wolf did a lot of great things, obviously, but that was hiring Sherman and then letting him take over as general manager was strike one and strike two in my opinion.
Well, and that was two in a row. For everything we love about Ron Wolf, that came on the heels of his hiring and then firing
Ray Rhodes
after one season in 1999. So he went from Mike Holmgren to two. It wasn't a clunk. Sherman isn't going to be thought of as a clunker because Favre and the rest of that team bailed him out, and they probably won in spite of him. But the 2005 season was kind of the warts showing. And then they didn't have a good year that year. And then of course that's Thompson's first year. And then it was from that point it was on to McCarthy.
Yeah, McCarthy I like. I do. I think it got bad at the end because in this NFL you can't stay somewhere that long. You just it just doesn't work. I don't know why, but it just this is the days of Tom Landry in Dallas and Don Shula in Miami forever and ever and ever. And even those guys at the end weren't very good. So, Mike McCarthy did well. I mean, especially when you compare him to Mike Sherman, for God's sake. Like I said, all that talent, forget not getting to a Super Bowl, never got to the title game, never got to the NFC title game, ever. That's inexcusable. With that talent, and that's to me is inexcusable.
Right, and then for McCarthy to do it in his second year with a revitalized Brett Favre, I think that only accentuates the what might have been potentially missing from the Packers while Sherman was at the helm.
I agree. I couldn't agree more.
So awesome stuff. Good stuff, Mark. Is there anything else that you're working on at Packer Report that's coming out this week that you want to pump?
Draft stuff. Yeah, I'm going to do Monday. It'll be a look at the wide receivers, and I talked to a good personnel guy, a guy I trust. I've dealt with him for years and years and years. And it's going to be a lot different than what you're seeing in online. And in I don't look at mock drafts as much as most people. But his list of wide receivers that I'm going to run is a little different than what everyone else is saying.
Good. We need that, though. That's what I was saying earlier is I'm getting lazy. I'm like, I'm constantly picking Ayuk. And then Michael Pittman.
30?
And Ayuk in the simulations that I do, Ayuk seems to be there in the second round, which I don't think
that's a second round pick. That'd be a good second round pick.
Yeah, it's in the second round. I don't take him in the first round, but he always seems to be there, and then Pittman seems to be there, and it's a lot of the same guys. So we need some fresh eyes and some fresh perspective. I'm looking forward to reading that.
Since you do these, and I don't even think about it till like the week before. Who are you taking at 30?
The 30th pick depends on how the.
Sure, I'm saying who have you taken when you do it? Like, give me a couple names.
Gosh, it's been so long since I've done one. Now for some reason I'm blanking on who it is that I've taken in a lot of these in the first round. if either Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen are available, I'm drafting either one of those two. Those have always been my picks. But then recently, which makes me feel good that they do update the rankings, they haven't been there at 30. They've never made it that far.
If Murray makes it to 30, I've said this. I'm on the record of saying this. If Murray makes it to 30, it shouldn't take the Packers more than 10 seconds to get that card up, or not. However, they're doing it this year. I guess there won't be an actual card going up, but whatever. I mean, that would be the greatest pick of all. That would be unbelievable. It would also mean about 15 teams made a mistake.
Right.
So I think Murray is one of my favorite players in this draft.
Yeah, Murray and Queen.
I'm not as high on Queen as everybody else is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, a lot of people feel the opposite. I've heard the opposite of where they feel like Murray is more raw. He's got a lot of talent, but is he going to reel it in and be able to move up to the next level, where they feel like Queen is more ready to go on day one?
I differ. Again, I'm talking to my guy. I'm not a scout, but the guy I trust tells me Murray's very, very good. Queen might not be.
So Josh Jones, the offensive tackle, totally different position. Like, if he makes it to one, I've picked him before, but that's only happened, I think, once.
All right. Well, we'll do this again next week, right?
We will do, yeah. So good news for April. We're going to mix up the schedule. You're going to see some changes throughout Pack-A-Day, and one of them is that Mark is going to be joining me every week along with Paul Brettel. So it'll be the three of us every Saturday, and that'll start next week. So Mark,
great stuff, obviously.
That should be. Yeah, it should be draft coverage and whatever news happens in the doldrums of whatever it is that we're doing every day to get to get through this quarantine situation. So I guess, Mark, until I talk to you next time, enjoy the beach.
Yep, I'm going to try.
And in the meantime, we'll all do what we always do, which is go Pack Go.